Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast, Sunday the 25th of February. I'm Phil Carroll.
And I'm Kevin Holmes.
So we're coming to you from sunny Namibia. We've had an epic week in a beautiful and hospitable country. More on that later. So what news stories have we had this week? I don't know any short answer, Kev, to be honest, because I've had a digital detox. It's been great being on these camps where there's been no real mixed Wi-Fi coverage, and we've not been pinged with news, have we?
We have no news stories to report, so therefore that's...
Well, we do, actually. Wait a minute, there's a couple, just briefly. Egypt rapidly constructed over 3 kilometres of wall. That was one that pinged through. What do you make of that, being living in Egypt?
I'm very glad they don't want to push a 1 to 2 million Palestinians into Egypt, because it will not be a good deal for anybody.
Has it got the danger of spilling over, though, now? The fact, I mean, they've obviously put up this, I believe it's 16 square kilometres of cleared land near Gaza, and this erected wall has gone up pretty quickly. Oh, no, this reckon is over 3 kilometres. I mean, do you think it's got the propensity now to spill into Egypt? That's the worry, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I think they're building the wall so that it doesn't spill into Egypt ultimately, aren't they? So, I mean, maybe it will spill into the land, but not actually. Then we have thousands on hundreds of thousands of people moving to Cairo, which would not be a good thing. It's not good, is it? I mean, they've just got to stop. It is, like, disgraceful what's now happening. I'm sorry. It is absolutely deplorable what is actually happening. In the case of let's get rid of Hamas, no, this is just let's get rid of Palestinians, full stop.
Yeah.
And nobody's really speaking out in the governments, are they? They're all just...
Well, the UK government had a massive vote of no confidence, didn't they? And I think it was this week, from what another bit of news that came through, they've got to do something about it. This is the point. And Biden needs to do something as well, doesn't he? And really show his strength there. So there was also news of an American company that made history by becoming the first commercial outfit to put a spacecraft on the moon. Houston-based Intuitive Machines landed its Odysseus robot near the lunar South Pole. It took some minutes for controllers to establish that the craft was down, but eventually a signal was received. So again, that space race, we've had India put in probes on the moon, haven't we? It seems like it's still, you know, countries that have got massive amounts of debt and poverty there, but yet they can still push space race.
I feel like we visited the moon in Namibia anyway, so...
Let's move on to Namibia.
Never mind putting something on the moon, just visit Namibia.
Yeah, it feels otherworldly, doesn't it? So, what while we... I mean, obviously, apologies if there is some background noise. We are literally coming to you from an airport terminal. We've gone through, we're now airside, and we're waiting for our flight, so we're just getting round to see if there's any background noise. Apologies for that. What are your thoughts on Namibia, what we've seen? And obviously, you're going to hear some voice notes from where we've been later on in the show. But what are your sort of thoughts now, the wrap-up as we're leaving?
Yeah, it's been great. It's been a great experience. I mean, Namibia are a country of just over 2 million people. They're in mourning at the minute because the president has passed away. Yeah, no, a great country. Great roads, great infrastructure.
Hospitable people, very friendly.
Yeah, crap internet everywhere.
Yeah. But in a way, that's been, as we said before, it's been quite a nice bit of a detox from it, hasn't it?
It's been good to see some of the sites and some of the wildlife. Obviously, we've been at several mine sites, which you'll hear about now in the voice clips. But yeah, it's been a very pleasant experience all around. Yep.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, let's listen to some of those notes, obviously, from when we arrived and then through to meeting Hunter Kennedy, the exploration geologist, and also Martin Churchhouse on various projects that we've been to see.
Okay, so we're heading out of Solitaire now. Solitaire is a small, can only be described as a sort of desert oasis where people refuel and taste some of the famous apple crumble there that's been going for many, many years, the little cafe in town. But we've fueled up and we're heading out now on the C14. We're heading up towards Walvis Bay on the road that takes you to the western side of Namibia on the Atlantic coast. And we're going to go and meet a mining expert, Hunter, and he's going to take us around the Hope and Gorup complex, which is obviously part of Bezant Resources assets. So we're looking forward to meeting Hunter and being shown around. But the road I'm on now can only really be described as a sort of gravel track, really, very dusty road. I'm doing about 80 kilometres an hour in a 4x4. There's oryxes running in front of the vehicle every now and then. You see them passing over the road. There's a lovely vista that reminds me a lot of the kind of the Grand Canyon or the Nevada desert. And there's quite a lot of greenery around. In fact, we're in the middle of a desert. It's quite shocking, really, seeing all this greenery and lush countryside. So what are your thoughts on what we're seeing, Kev?
Yeah, well, we landed in Windhoek on Friday morning. Took a 5-6 hour drive down to the desert area of Namib, the Namib Desert. And we stayed over in a very tranquil place, a sort of outpost place, which was just literally in the middle of nowhere.
Eco Lodge, wasn't it? So everything was like solar powered, and all the water was basically pumped from the ground. It was all very, very eco, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then we did the biggest dunes in the world.
Big Daddy.
So we climbed the arm of Big Daddy yesterday, and slid down the...
Ran
down the dunes.
Full of sand.
Into what was the most amazing Deadle part thing. Of the thing, which was the sort of dead trees or the Deadelvi area, which you see many pictures of online and all about the place. But it was really quite an amazing experience in terms of that. And then now, as Phil has already stated, we're on our way to Hopungarab to meet the engineer. We're going to meet the engineer at a predetermined point, which there isn't anything there other than just meet us there.
Yeah, and there's no phone signal, it's literally like you're not going to get a signal out in the middle of nowhere, so let's just hope that this rendezvous goes well.
Yeah, if we don't meet him, we're in trouble. And then we're going to go on then to Wallace Bay direction to the Atlantic coast. And as Phil said, there's some uranium stuff around there, so we're hoping to check that out. It's not to do with any of the companies, but it'll be interesting, especially considering what we were talking about with UEE, which is Power's spin out of the uranium play, which is going to be the main play for exploration on uranium in the UK market anyway. All very interesting, and we'll keep you updated.
We'll report from the Hopungarab site.
Yeah, indeed.
So we're now on our way to Hopungarab. We're joined by Hunter Kennedy, exploration geologist. Hi there.
Hi.
So could you, Hunter, just give us a brief kind of synopsis of Namibia and its kind of the mining and the different commodities that exist, and even some of the potential examples of mines that are in production right now?
So I think the most well-known is the uranium mines. So Hoesap is in production currently. Lange Heinrich is in care and maintenance, but there's numerous deposits, uranium deposits known. Then there's the marine diamonds, alluvial diamonds from Luderitz towards Oranjemund. There's been a steady decline in that production. Then we have the gold mines at Navagap. Karabib B2 Gold is doing very well. And then there's numerous copper deposits or small occurrences, and really of late there's not been big mines. In the south you have the lead zinc of Rospina. Rospina has been in and out of care and maintenance for the last 5 years, so there was a lot of retrenchments and very, very little activity. And then a big thing that's coming up now is all the lithium. Namibia is very rich in pegmatite. A lot of spodumene, so there's a lot going on. There's not that much mines really. You have Hoesap, which is a big mine. You have Navagap. You have B2 Gold near Omururu. Beers have cut back a lot, Namdeb. So yeah, it's a lot of exploration activity, a lot of potential. There is some mines, but it's not what it could be.
And I guess with the price of uranium busting through that $100 on the pound, there's every sort of drive, and everybody wants to get the mines back into operation when it makes more sort of economic sense.
Absolutely. I think the uranium price had dropped again after the spike in 2002. So definitely Namibia is getting more and more attention on the uranium again. There's some very easy mining feasible operations, so that will get attention. That being said, I think in the world there's more uranium than we know of.
Yeah.
So as soon as that uranium price peaks, more operations get going, more operations get online, and that suppresses the uranium price again. So I'll be careful of putting too much hope in the uranium. That being said, the Namibian occurrences are so big and so economically feasible that if you are going to mine uranium, it's probably going to be, Namibia is still going to be one of the meccas for that.
Okay, so now we've arrived at the Hope asset. Do you want to just talk us through what we're seeing on this outcrop here, please, Hunter?
Sure. So the competent rock that you see there, that black rock, is exhalite. That's related to the VMS deposit. We refer to it as the magnetite quartzite. After metamorphism, it has attained a texture that resembles a quartzite, but it isn't a quartzite, it's an exhalite. And there's some magnetite in it. It forms a very good marker. It's the stratigraphic hanging wall to the ore. So because it's competent and it weathers positively, you can trace it throughout the landscape quite easily and then reference yourself and find the ore relative to that.
So as a geologist, you're constantly looking at, because we look at this and think it just looks like rocks that are there. But from a geologist's perspective, you really do see a kind of almost a potential and a commonality between the different rocks that we're looking at on this vista now.
So we need markers. We need to know where we are in the stratigraphy.
Yeah.
And where the potential ore horizon is relative to that. And that's an excellent marker. So if you know where that is, and then if you look to our right, that green rock over there is the amphibolite. So between the exhalite, the magnetite quartzite, and the amphibolite is where the VMS mineralization could be present. So this is our hunting ground between the two.
Okay. And to date, how many exploration holes have been put? I know that there's a table there that talks about some of the work that's been done in terms of technical reports, but just talk us through what sort of sampling has been done on this Hope asset over the years.
So in total on Hope, there's something in the order of 250 diamond core boreholes.
Okay.
And then about another 50 percussion boreholes.
Okay.
And we have all of that data, so that forms part of the resource calculation.
So tell us, Hunter, how did this happen? I mean, obviously, none of us were about when this happened many years ago. But why is there VMSs in the middle of the desert? Which stands for what? Volcanic
massive sulfides. Yes, okay. Volcanic massive sulfides. So it's spreading ridges in an oceanic setting where hot fluids, because of your volcanic activity, migrate through the host rock and then leaches. So you form these convection cells, and that leaches metals from the host rock. And then as these convection cells reaches the water again, the water is quite cold, it's very deep, metals precipitate. That's a VMS. And your exhalites are the last phase of silica that crystallizes always on your hanging wall of the mineralization.
So in other words, it's like a big pot of rock with a percentage of copper in this case that is in this VMS.
Yeah, our grade over here is sitting at roughly 2% copper. We have some gold grades around half a gram per ton. Yeah, and we have some silver, 45 grams per ton. But the silver comes and goes. But yeah, the copper and gold is quite constant.
So Hunter, how many of these VMS occurrences are on this license?
So on the license we are currently on, there's 13 that we know of. And then on the next license, there's 4. But there's still a lot of exploration to be done on the further license. So there might be more.
And there's also some of these VMSs which you've shown us on the map are very close to each other. So they will not be 13 separate pits, I take it. There will be in mining contexts. What are you looking at on this license particularly?
So it seems like there would be seven mining operations or pits to mine these 13 occurrences.
Okay, and it would just be one after the other carried on, or they would sort of happen together, you think?
Optimally, we would want to open two pits at a given time and then develop parallel to that, but have two open pits so that if something happens in a given pit, you still have a second pit running.
Okay, very good. Okay, so here we are in the back of a 4x4
in Namibia. I'm not even going to try and pronounce the name of the place because I've got it wrong so many times. And we're here with Martin Churchhouse, geologist, and the man who's going to now just explain to us about what's going on at Hope and Garab, and we'll then move on to Umbongo. Martin.
Hi, Kevin. Nice to see you again. We start with Ungombo. As you know, the mining licence has been granted subject to the approval of the ESIA and the Environmental Clearance Certificate, which is about 90-95% complete now. So we would expect to get that to a point where it's submitted in the next couple of weeks. We, in the meantime, have done a considerable amount of work looking at different processing methodologies. We think we've come up with something for Ungombo that will work particularly well. We've now brought in a mining engineer who's working on the small open pit and the underground development for the resource. So we're well ahead of the in terms of the process, and as soon as we've got the mining license officially granted, once the ECC is done, then we're good to go. If we look at Hope and Garab, again, the mining licenses application has been submitted, as everybody knows. We have also now submitted the ESIA and the Environmental Management Plan. Both of those have gone in. We've completed public consultation. We've also now just completed the, I think it's 15 days or 30 days, where we have to again give the public the opportunity to comment on the actual ESIA and the Environmental Management Plan. That has been done and the documentation has been submitted.
So just to put you in the picture, we visited Hope and Garab. It's in the, how can I politely put it, the arse end of nowhere. There is nothing there. There is nobody about. There is basically VMSs and a research station next to it. So really, from the public's point of view, there isn't really an issue with Hope and Garab, you would imagine.
You would hope not. It is in a park, but having said that, so is the largest open pit uranium mine in the world, at Husab. That's also in the park. That's a bit further away from us. In terms of communities and people, there's a small community that lives in the Kwisab River Valley, but they're about 30 odd kilometres away from us. So, yeah, there's nobody around. It's pretty isolated.
Very good. And going back to Ungombo, give us an idea of sort of the time scales that we're likely to be looking at of setting up and putting that mine into operation then. I mean, are we going to take probably the rest of 2024 to get us to a position where we start producing ore?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's going to, once you've got the approval for the, or once you've submitted all the documentation as, you know, for the environmental permit, it'll take a couple of months to get that sorted out. Then we'll be in a position to start looking at placing orders and things for plant and equipment. With the best will in the world, based on looking at purchasing similar equipment for Hope and Garab, you're probably looking at 3 to 4 months for that. So you're looking at the end of this year before you're in a position where you'd start to have equipment coming on site. Then you're probably looking at maybe another 6 months. So middle of 2025 would be my estimate.
Okay. And then at what sort of tonnage do you see Ungombo being able to produce in the first instance?
In the first instance, I mean, there's a small open pit, but it is, you know, it is very small. It's only a few hundred thousand tons. Thereafter, we'll be going underground, and we're looking ultimately at trying to produce around about sort of 30,000 tons a month from Ungombo. Where it gets interesting is the original assay work, well, the original drilling that we did picked up some nice gold assays, a nice gold byproduct. The historic work that was done back in the sort of mid-'80s, early 90s by Goldfields principally, they didn't bother to assay for gold in most cases. So there are some parts of the ore body in an area called the East Ost Shoots where the ore body is quite substantial, it's quite wide, but there were no gold assays done. We will do a few of those in the next, you know, coming months, next couple of months. We'll do some drilling there, and if we find that we're getting decent gold values, then that you know, becomes a whole different proposition then, because it means that we can go into that shoot, we can afford the sort of the primary, the cost of the primary development to get into that shoot, so that we can actually pull out a lot more tons. So it could be bigger.
And that will have good gold credit, as you say, or should have.
Well, we'll find out soon enough, because we'll drill it in the next couple of months.
Very good. And how do you envisage then Hope and Garib moving forward in Bazant? We obviously have to assume mining license is going to come at some point in 2024. So what will happen then?
We've completed most of the sort of detailed metallurgical test work for ore sorting, which is our sort of preferred method of processing the ore. Principal reason for that, as you said, we're in the middle of nowhere. We're in the Namib Desert. Water is at a premium, so therefore we want a processing technology that's not reliant on water, and in fact can operate without water. So we've got that. That comes as a unit. We're talking to a company, a German company that has an office here on the coast in Namibia. We're also talking to a well-known engineering company that will be building the front-end equipment for us, the crusher and the conveyors and so on. Both parties have sat around the same table to make sure that everything will sort of configure and tie up nicely. So that's looking good. We've got a potential EPC with a provider of renewable energy, renewable power, which will be in the form of solar. We need to get to a point where we're comfortable with what's being offered, so that we can then give them the green light to go ahead. They'll have to do their own environmental impact assessment and so on, but I wouldn't imagine that would be too difficult. So that has to be done. And then we are working on a plan to take our pre-concentrate that we'll produce from the ore sorter to produce a final concentrate that will then get shipped to the deep water terminal at Walvis Bay on the coast,
which isn't too far away basically from Hope and Garib.
Correct.
Yep. And you will have transportation in trucks, or will that go by train, or
it'll be trucks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay. So, what sort of timescales are you putting on Hope and Garib? I mean, I know, flip me, we're talking about how long is a piece of string in terms of when you get the actual mining license. But assuming you got the mining license, say within the next 3 months, what are the timescales that we're looking at?
By the if we get the mining license in the next 3 months, then by the time we have placed orders for equipment, you'll be looking at Q1 2025.
Okay, so a similar time to Ongombo, really.
Yeah.
The likely both come on stream at similar times.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Thanks for your input there.
So let's have a look at some of the news this week in terms of the market. We saw an announcement, it was actually an announcement from Newmont, wasn't it, in terms of the way that they're going to divest some of their portfolio of assets. And who should be on there? No other than obviously Greatland Gold's Havieron and Telfer project were listed. So
yeah, I think they probably will. I mean, they've got Wyloo backing there, and I think a huge amount of that would be able to be funded through bank finance as well, because it's so
got to deal with HSBC, haven't they, there that was announced, and all the other Australian outfits.
So I personally think it could be a real game changer for Greatland Gold. I mean, I think Greatland Gold being able to possibly purchase Telfer as well as Havieron and have the whole complex in terms of processing and all of the gold that's available there.
Do you think this is actually a win? This is a good result in terms of Newmont not taking it further and developing them, pulling the plug
on
it?
From my conversations with Sean over the last 6 to 9 to 12 months,
this is the outcome he wanted.
This is what he wanted.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a negative at all. I think it's probably one of the most positive.
Do you think Greatland can go on to now become a producer then, in terms of actually taking those assets right through?
Yeah. No, I think Greatland could be like a mini major, basically. I think it's very likely, because the sheer volume of cash flow that will be generated from Havieron over the next sort of 3 to 5 years is going to mean that they're going to be able to buy things up along the way and become, as I said, that mini major over the next 5 years plus. So yeah, I think it's a really positive move.
There's also some news from Energy Pathways this week. but they announced the company secured a first right of refusal with a major subsea equipment provider to purchase two subsea production trees. And the company's going to progress with the equipment certification and testing of those trees. So we caught up with Ben Klube, CEO of Energy Pathways, earlier in the week. This is what he had to say.
Hi, Phil and Kevin. Look, the signing of this MOU with Mermaid Subsea and MCS Subsea Solutions is a fantastic and important milestone for Energy Pathways. Mermaid and MCS bring an innovative and practical approach to subsea engineering and construction, which will be of great value to the Maram Gas Project. Now, the Maram Gas Project is our foundation energy transition development, and it has potential to deliver strong value and returns. To realise this value for our shareholders, our approach to decarbonisation will be critical. Even though the Maram Gas Project already has an exceptionally low carbon footprint, with emissions intensity approximately 1/15 of imported LNG, Energy Pathways, Mermaid and MCS, through the design and FEED phase, will be challenging traditional oil and gas thinking and opening doors to practical, cost-effective and value-add decarbonisation solutions. I'm pleased to report that Mermaid, MCS and Energy Pathways teams have already kicked off and are making excellent progress. We've already identified Zaplog, a proprietary submarine pipelay technology, which we believe is absolutely ideal for the East Irish Sea environment that we're operating in. Now, just to be clear, we're not using untested new technology here. This is a globally proven and approved technology. And since the 1990s, more than 7,500 kilometres of this system has been installed and shown to save up to 40% in installation costs relative to other approaches. Also, with Mermaid's global reach across the supply chain, in particular with vessels and long lead items, we believe this gives Energy Pathways an edge for Maram project cycle times and identifying and securing cost-effective supply chain solutions. This MOU further positions Energy Pathways to be a major contributor to safeguarding the UK's energy security and transition to net zero, as well as supporting UK jobs, industry and investment. And I look forward to update you in due course on our progress on decarbonisation strategies for the Maram Gas Project. Thank you.
So the other news this week was Ben's Creek, wasn't it? Well, there was an announcement of the appointment of CEO Ben's Creek. It was obviously Chris Walker has been appointed as Chief CEO at Ben's Creek Operations. What do you make of that? Obviously, it was announced at the end of last week that Adam would be replaced.
Yeah, he seems a very experienced guy, and obviously decided they wanted a change of personnel.
14 years with Peabody Energy in a variety of senior finance, strategy and marketing roles.
Yeah, and Adam has really taken it from sort of disused mine to this point now, and obviously this guy's got a lot of mining experience, so yeah, I think it will really help it. Yeah. I mean, the share price is ridiculously low considering the potential that it has. You've got things like Warrior Metcoal, who've hit all-time highs in the last few months, not far away, and very much indebted as well still, and you know, still very, very valuable in terms of their valuation. So
yeah,
something's not right in terms of the valuation, but let's just see what comes of it now.
Yeah, Adam put out a statement saying, "It's been my absolute pleasure to be involved in Ben's Creek right from the very start. I am confident with the full remediation of the business, and that with the start of problems now behind us, Chris will be able to take the business to the next level, and I look forward to warmly welcoming him into the company. Chris has all the relevant experience to establish Ben's Creek as a fully integrated high-vol B met coal producer to both the domestic and international markets, and as a significant shareholder, I look forward to the next chapter for Ben's Creek under his leadership." So,
yeah, I was going to say the same thing. Adam's still a huge shareholder in Ben. He wants it in good hands as well, as much as everybody else, probably more than everybody else. So, yeah.
Okay, there's also news on Extract, wasn't there? I think that they had the AGM, EGM or GM general meeting for the sale of the Manika assets. That was obviously passed. So what does that mean now going forward for Extract, you think?
Well, it means Extract's going to be focusing heavily on northwest Zambia. We had fascinating geological discussions
with the two of them, and they were all comparing rocks and talking about geography. I don't think I've ever learned more about systems and all that running through, and dome systems running through Zambia, have you?
And all I can say to you is that based on what we saw, Galileo, African Pioneer, and Extract are in the box seat in terms of this. We've had geologists from other companies that are dealing with African Pioneer who want to drill into the Galileo and the Extract ones to confirm a redox front.
Increasing oxidization.
Yeah, but the reality of it is they're right in this area where, as they said, there's a redox front, there's copper. Okay.
So it's it only really needs one of them to find it, whether that be First Quantum or the other companies drilling locally or nearby in that area. And, you know, you're there, aren't you?
And it was interesting to see as well from an African Pioneer point of view that two of African Pioneer's licenses are in this northwest district, and the other one is in the next district along, which is sort of crushed and twisted and all those type of things, but still very, very, very prospective for copper. And hence why First Quantum elected to take all four licenses. And I think it's 300,000 tons, is it, that they have to prove up? And
all the licenses, yeah. And there's an investment of like $0.5 million or something like that.
For each license. Yeah. So, yeah, I think all I'd say to you is that the Galileo Extract, African Pioneer, we obviously had discussions and some information on Gombo as well here, which is not far from where we are right now in Windhoek, and all looks very prospective. What do you think of Hope and Gorup? We went, obviously.
Yeah, we had a look at that. We walked in effectively some of the ore, didn't we? And there was a few rocks that pulled out showing oxidization, etc. And obviously we saw that the drilling that had been done today, there was a shafts there, wasn't there? Went down about 150 meters. It's pretty much close to a research center where we called in and spoke to some of the locals. I mean, it's there, isn't it? And ultimately, it's just a case of getting hopefully the licenses will come in due course, as Martin's alluded to on those previous voice notes. It's a case of getting that going, getting everything there, start tucking it out, and determining where they're gonna process it. Really,
yeah. And to be clear, African Pioneer have the license already on Ongombo, and I think the license for Hope and Gorup is close. You know, as Martin said on the voice notes, you know, he's hoping within the next 3 months. Let's see. I mean, I think it's been delayed slightly because of the death of the president.
Yeah.
So that's probably pushed it back a month. So yeah, I think they were expecting it imminently. That might delay it a number of weeks, maybe. But there's then a lot of preparation work to do on both sites, and as Martin alluded to, sort of both Galileo and African Pioneer could be in production mid-2025. And I don't think he's over-egging that. I think he's being very cautious with that timeline. And then you've also got Lou and Sobey, who are going to be visiting in Zambia, which could be in production this year.
And Shinganda as well, haven't you?
And Shinganda as well for Galileo. So the number, what I think I see on the market is people are starting to realize that Colin Bird has actually got things right in terms of copper and what he's actually looked for and what he's put into his companies. Extract's a good example. He's now crystallized the money from the gold operations and is going to be putting them into northwest Zambia. Galileo is already cashed up and ready to go. African Pioneer is going to have an asset that's delivering it within a year and a bit. And the reality is it's got very prospective licenses in northwest Zambia, four of them. And it's also got licenses in Botswana as well. We haven't even mentioned Botswana, but we've talked on this trip about going to visit Botswana as well for various companies. So yeah, it's been an eye-opener. There is still a lot of work to do. But, you know, if you want small capitalization companies that could basically change the game, you've got those three, and then Hope and Gorup, you've got Bazant. The minute this license comes, there is no way on earth Bazant is worth £2 million, you know, which is what its current market cap is. So will it go up before that on anticipation? Who knows? But I think, you know, Bazant could also be one of those companies that could come from nowhere and do extremely well. And what we've seen, and Hunter, who is the main geologist who's going to be dealing with Bazant, is a very, very good and switched on guy. So, watch this space in terms of them, all four of them. And I think there's going to be, has been quite a bit of news come out recently about Kendrick Resources as well. Obviously not Africa-based, but again, watch this space for that. because that's valued at £1.2 million, which is nuts, considering it was IPO'd at £8 million, I think it was.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. And as Martin said, because I think Martin is the managing director, CEO of that one now, is very, very confident that there is some serious projects to occur in that. So, yeah.
Okay. So the other news we saw this week was First Class Metals. They obviously announced that there was a share placing. That was actually the premium, basically 3.7 million shares and the price of 4.5 pence with a single existing private investor, raising £166,500. So, I mean, what does that mean? Do you think that Assays is exactly could be too far away?
No, I just don't think they had any cash. So they had to do it imminently, I think.
Yeah.
Basically, I think that's what it says. I mean, it hasn't changed the assets in any way, shape, or form. And they obviously raised previously to spend money to get those drill holes done and the assays, and to pay down some debt, I think, as well, which was why they raised that money in the first place.
Okay, so there was also, I don't know if you saw the article that Charles Archer put out regarding Golden Metal Resources. I think it's called the Golden Metal Resources Edit. There was a deep dive into the investment potential of gold, and they had about an hour-long chat with Oliver Friesen in the week. If anyone hasn't heard it and are interested in it, whether there be a shareholder or potential shareholder, we encourage you to go and listen to that, because it was a really good chat he had with Oliver. I think they seemed quite relaxed. It was all flowing.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? And you can tell Charles when he's in front of these CEOs, he loves it, doesn't he? He buzzes on it. He's got a really good sort of cheeky vibe to him, hasn't he?
He does. And the two of them are consummate professionals in terms of how they go on about things. So, you know, it was a great chat. There was lots of good questions and some fantastic answers. And here's one just for you to listen to as an example.
Okay, let's say, for example, you get a bit of grant funding or some warrants get exercised, you get a bit of money. Which target are you going to drill first? Or do you want to drill them all at the same time? What's the number one to go for at the moment?
I mean, I'd love to drill them all at the start, to be completely honest. But, you know, if I'm being realistic, oh man, it's a good question. I would say probably the one that I would drill the first would be the Desert Scheelite Parallel West Zone. The reason for that is, I encourage listeners to go to our website, go to our corporate presentation, and just have a look at the Pilot Mountain overview map as I kind of talk about this. The reason I would probably start here is this is a target that we uncovered and discovered in 2022, 2023 with our IP survey. And this is a bit of a technical run through. And just forgive me, I'm going to take a few minutes to explain this because it's very important what I'm saying. When you do geophysics over an existing known mineralized body, it's much different than doing geophysics over virgin terrain where you have no drill holes on it and you know nothing about the subsurface. We know precisely where Desert Scheelite is, which hosts the majority of the in-ground resource at Pilot Mountain. So we have the largest tungsten resource in the U.S. sits within Desert Scheelite. Full stop, we know within a few meters exactly where that body of rock lies. Now, this is important because when we go and do geophysics now, we can look for the exact geophysical signature that lines up with that body. It's honestly like a cheat code, because I can look at the data. I have a 3D model on my computer where I can pull up the geophysical bodies that were returned from the survey that we did. And then I flip on the actual mineralized body of rock and I see what geophysical signature that body of rock created. And then what I do, and like I said, it's a cheat code, I then look elsewhere within the survey area and I look for the exact same geophysical signature. Because what we're looking for is additional zones of skarn, tungsten, copper, silver, zinc, and garnet mineralization. So at Desert Scheelite, what we've noticed there, and I won't go into the actual details, but what we have there in broad strokes is a chargeability high and a resistivity low. That body of rock that has all that tungsten causes charge high, res low. I know the exact numbers. I can tell you exactly the milliseconds of the chargeability anomaly that created. That's not important for this conversation. But what I then did is I looked elsewhere within the property with my geophysicist to say, okay, are there any other zones that look almost identical to Desert Scheelite that have never been drilled? And sure enough, there were multiple. The one that I think is the most interesting for multiple reasons, is desert scheelite parallel west. Number one, it's effectively sub-parallel to desert scheelite. So what we're looking at is maybe a stacked zone, which is very common in these type of geological terrains. But more importantly, the geophysical signature that showed up at desert scheelite parallel west was, I kid you not, almost identical to desert scheelite. But with the caveat that that zone has never received a single drill hole. On top of that, I mean, what we can do with this software is we can estimate the size of these anomalies. Obviously, it's not going to give us the tonnage, but we can say, hey, this is a, you know, 400 meter zone by 300 by two, whatever that number is. And sure enough, the desert scheelite parallel west zone was larger than desert scheelite. Now, that is one of the five zones that we identified. Plus, there's another three zones, garnet, Good Hope, Gunmetal, which have known drilled intercepts of tungsten, copper, silver, and zinc, which have not, the majority of which have not been added to the mineral inventory. So it's a long-winded answer, but what I'm saying here is really important, because if we go and drill desert scheelite parallel west, one single hole, and if we intersect what we think is probably going to be there, because we know what's the, you know, we know the geophysical signature there, yeah. That potentially could be a body that's already bigger than desert scheelite, which means we've more than doubled our resource with, you know, very little drilling. So that's a bit of a long-winded answer. That's one I would probably start with. The other ones I could probably give you an almost equally as bullish answer, but I think just that one really highlights why what we're doing is so important and how tremendous the exploration upside is on this property.
Listen, if you think you can double your resource by with a few drills into one asset, one target even, then I understand why that would be number one. I can equally understand as CEO why you want to, you know, you don't want to say the others like children that you want to neglect. Obviously they're not, but there's always going to be one that you want the most.
Okay, well, it's been there's been quite a lot of voice notes there for you to all to digest. On that note, I'm looking out. You're about to board your plane. You've just announced the Johannesburg flight. So a bit farewell to you, Kev. It's been a great week, and we'll be back next week with more content. So if you like what you've heard, please hit the subscribe icon and the bell icon as well for future notifications of further episodes.
Yep, thanks for listening, guys.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.